Blog Talk Radio.
There was this girl who killed herself, and everyone tried to blame someone else. But in my eyes, they all were to blame, because they put her down and showed no shame. She laughed along with all their jokes and never said a word, while all along she was dying inside with every word she heard. It's not true that guns and knives are the worst of them all, but words are the weapons that can make a person take their hardest fall. So be careful what you say and who you put down, because the words you say to them might be the ones that put them in the ground. Good evening, everybody. This is your girl, the VIP, coming to you from the Poets Without Limits Network with the Girl Me Too radio show. And tonight, our subject is a quite a heavy one. We're calling it Save Our Children, and we'll be talking about teen suicide. And when we say teen, we're talking about preteens. We're talking about that early 20s, post-teens. And so we just ask you that you tune in, you call in, give us your insight. If you have a story that you like to share of dealing with this subject, please let us know, but just remember to be respectful, because there are some parents out there that are still dealing with this issue. And at this time, I want to introduce my co-host, Special K. Special K, usually we say what up to the people, but I don't even know what to say tonight coming in.
I still want to say what's up to the people. What's going on, everybody out there in radio land? Yes, we are on a super, 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 super sensitive subject, super, super serious subject, and that's saving our children. This is a mandate that is out there right now, and that's each one, reach one, no matter what the cost. It's oftentimes, VIP, that we see smiles on the faces of those whom we think are happy, but yet their insides are crying and screaming out for someone to help them. And it is time now. You know, a lot of times we often say, you know, don't be nosy, stay out of other folks' business, and, you know, all this other kind of stuff. But I beg to differ with you. I beg to differ with them. It's time to get nosy. It's time to pry. Be concerned enough, not just to be nosy, but when you find out, do something about it. Is my point that I say. Be concerned enough, be loving enough to pry so much so that you get to the bottom of what's going on before we lose another child. It's time out for us to turning our heads and moving over to the other side. It's time out for us worrying about me, my three, us, four, no more, shut the door. It's time out for us worrying about just what's happening in our houses. But it's time to step outside of what's going on in the same instance that we would want it for someone who would care and love us enough as well. So absolutely, yeah. What's up to the people, and a big wake up to the people, because it is time that we get aggressive about saving our children.
Amen, amen. You said the key word. It's time to get aggressive with saving our children. You know, here recently, my 15-year-old daughter has had to deal with, in the past month, two people committing suicide, a 10th grader and an 8th grader. And it's almost like, what do you tell your child when this is going on, you know, right around them? It's like, how do you explain to them how this is happening, you know, right in front of them? Before we dive too deep into this subject tonight, I want to bring on our guest, Tiffany Gray, as she's going to tune in with us on this subject and give her opinion and feedback as well.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, Tiffany.
How are you? Hello?
Yes.
Hey, Tiffany, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity.
Absolutely. What a serious opportunity it is. What a serious op it is for tonight as well as we dive into this. We'll let you go ahead and give us some information and insight there on your experience and just how you feel about the subject in itself.
I think it's very necessary that we have these conversations. I'm a youth pastor. I have a degree in psychology, and one child lost is one too many. And
absolutely.
I think that a lot of times our kids go through things and we don't have any idea that they're going through it, or we don't know how to communicate with them. So it's these kind of platforms that really have the ability to educate us parents and also give kids the opportunity to know how to come to their parents or know how to come to an adult, even if it's not their parents, and express what's going on in their life. So thank you, Special K and VIP, for even opening this platform up, because it's very needed in today's society.
I think the thing that, you know, we definitely have to, you know, say to the people and address to the people is that we have to have our eyes open, and not just with our own children, but with children, period, with these young adults, period. We see things on social media and we gloss over it, or we think that it's going to, you know, someone else is going to take care of it, someone else is going to handle it, and then before we know it, no one's handled it, and now we're burying, you know, another one of our young people. We have a caller on the line who is going to speak very soon, but I want to talk about a person in her life. They recently was a young person who recently committed suicide, and, you know, honestly, yeah, we all get a little nosy. We want to know what happened. Now, I'm personally, if I don't have that type of relationship, I'm not going to ask the questions. I will snoop a little bit on social media, but I know it's sensitive, you know, after the fact, and so I don't ask, you know, certain questions. But I went to this young man's page, and it broke my heart, because he was reaching out and reaching out and reaching out. And he had this one post that when he posted it, I believe it was like one like and maybe two comments. And it was a post reaching out. After he passed, it had like 40-something comments, 58 shares, and I was just so disgusted with the people, because I was like, where was all this sharing and comments and reaching out when he was screaming, help me? And the truth of the matter is, no, we can't save everyone. You know, we're not going to be able. Some people are just determined and they've made up their mind and that's it. But how do we face ourselves in the mirror when we read these things on social media and we just keep scrolling? We don't reach out. We don't inbox them. We don't, you know, call parents or friends or anybody to try to seek help for them. But we just, you know, it's not our problem.
That's so true. That's so true. And that's the point that I was making there, VIP and Tiffany. That's the point that I was making there. Well, we got to get nosy enough, even if it's making them uncomfortable, because oftentimes, you know, people have a tendency to withdraw, and they have a tendency to go away, and they don't want to be bothered, and they don't want to talk to anybody. And even when you ask them, how are you, they give you the I'm okay, or they give you the, you know, the smile and tell you that everything's fine. We have to have a level of discernment enough to have that alarm in our system to get that alert, to get those buzzers that go off to say something's not quite right here, to be personable enough, to be personal enough with these kids and with individuals to let them know that I care enough about you that you can come to me with what's happening and what's going on in your life. Oftentimes we have counselors in place, but even they're not available. Or they're not people that, you know, you want to talk to there. So we've got to, we need to have an actual open door that's available for them to be able to come in and vent, a place that they can go to. And that's a question that I heard, Tiffany, I heard you say you're a youth pastor and you have a degree in psychology and things like that. And in my, and I could be out of the loop here, so y'all make me aware, is there a place that our kids can go to? That's for them, that they know that they can seek out at any time to reach out to someone when they're in these eras and when they're having these issues. Do we have immediate or emergent, I'm going to call it houses. It doesn't have to be the physical place, but just an emergency house where they can find refuge to get help. Are we those houses for them?
Well, I do know that they have a teen suicide hotline, which we will be giving out that number tonight. There are always places that they can reach out to, but most of the time they're not known. And that is one of the biggest problems, that they don't know where to reach out to. But we're going to be giving out that number for the teen suicide hotline, as well as, you know, if your teen is in trouble, you can always call. In every state now, they have 211. And 211, you can get any information that you need about different things going on in your area, or different services, I should say, that are going on in your area. So if you are a parent who has a child in need and you don't know, you know, you don't know how to help, or you need that extra help, the church is always a good place to turn. And as I said, if you dial 211, they will give you services in your area. And if you're a teen that's struggling with depression or suicidal thoughts, the teen suicide hotline is a number you can call 24 hours a day. And there'll always be someone there to answer the phone. I think the thing that we want to get across, the biggest message that we want to get across, is when you commit suicide, you're making a permanent decision to a temporary problem. And it's not that we want to minimize the problems that our youth are facing, because honestly, I would not want to be a teen in 2016. I'm glad that I, you know, crossed over that. You know, I was here before that. So we don't want to minimize anything that you're going through. The only thing that we want to say to you is that it's going to get better, and there are resources to help you deal until it gets better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, now I'm a little strong-minded when it comes to these situations and things like that, especially when it comes to the kids. And I have to ask, and this was a question that I was asking as we were preparing for the show, and I was, you know, saying, what is it that is happening in the mind of a child, of an eighth grader, 10th grader, 7th grader, 6th grader? What's happening in the mind of a child? What pressure, peer pressure, what issues are happening with these children so much so that's causing them to want to take their lives. And it makes me pose the question, is social media too much for them, having to try and live up to certain things with all the, you know, the different facets of media that's there. The peer pressure, school is already enough. I know how it was when I was going to school and dealing with bullies, even halfway being one at the time, dealing with kids that are rude and cruel because you're not as fortunate as they are and you don't have what they have. And, you know, you can't help the status that your parents are in, and somebody may get to wear Jordans versus you got to wear some shoes that came from Walmart, you know, kind of thing. The stress and pressure of trying to have a status. And, you know, we as adults can often talk to them and can often tell them it's not about all that. It's not about, you know, the name brand. It's about who wears it. It's how you make it. We can say that all day, but at the end of the day, they still have to go to school and deal with the pressure of someone talking about them and mistreating them. I watched a video of this girl, and I watched this all the time. I saw this over a year ago, but I watched this video of this girl walking home and these kids, and they're posting it on social media, and they're talking about, you know, her clothing and talking. And mind you, this girl had on a pair of Jordans, but she didn't have on the latest pair of Jordans. So they was telling her she rocking the old stuff. She broke. She, you know, she, you know, live in this particular neighborhood. She doing this and she, and the girl was just walking and she had her head down, and, you know, all of them were, you know, several of them, and, you know, and they were taunting her and laughing at her and taking her through, you know, all of, and one girl in particular was doing it the most, but after a while she got fed up and she got tired of it, and she lunged out at the girl, and she whooped her unmercifully. She really did. But my point was, you know, yeah, and she beat the girl something terrible. She really did. But my point was, you know, this girl has on a pair of Jordans, and it still wasn't enough. You know, and she looked fine to me. She had on clothes. She was dressed nice, everything, but it still wasn't enough. And all, and you got people videoing. You got people laughing and taunting and still, you know, no one had enough guts to say, hey, yo, chill. Nobody had enough guts to say, don't do that. Even amongst these kids, this is the thing that I feel that we need to do, not only empowering our children to not get to the place of being suicidal and things like that, but empowering those that are around these kids the most to be able to stand up and say, hey, chill, don't do that. Don't participate in the foolishness. Don't participate in the mess, because as you read your poem today, the words you may say may put them in the grave. The very words that you just said to somebody may take them out, and in that same instance, you not doing anything, making them feel like that they have nobody. Even if you didn't say nothing to me, I think my mama used to say it back in the day, you not doing anything makes you a willing participant, because you sat there in the midst of it while it was being done, you know. So I think we need to not only empower those that are having the issues and dealing with the suicidal thoughts and things like that, and catching them and catching them before they get to that point of no return, but even teaching those other ones that are around them to be empowered and be strong enough to stand up for what's right and do what's right and help these ones that's dealing with all this peer pressure and going through all this stuff.
Hi, ma'am.
Yeah, I completely, sure, I completely agree with everything that's been said, and I think that before we focus so much on what's happening with the kids, we have to take a step back and talk about what's happening with the adults, because like you said, they just on social media, and we don't do a good job offending the people that are talked about. We don't, you know, defending them. We don't do a good job. You know, we do a lot of stuff that, so they're mirroring what they've done. But when our kids do it, we try to set a double standard. We fuss at them for talking about people on social media and being critical, but then we try to do the same thing. So we have to set an example to the point where something is going wrong, when we say something to the kids that are doing the bullying, they actually respect us. A lot of kids don't have the same kind of respect that we had for our parents. So
that's true. That's true.
When we got home, if the teacher called because we had said something about a kid, we was going to catch a beat down. You know, we knew that we had a reverent fear of our parents and our grandparents. So there were some things that we didn't do. So with the shift in parenting, which is not all the way bad, we've lost a lot of the things that were valuable in our upbringing. And so our kids, we value material things, so our kids value material things. So the lack thereof puts pressure on us when we can't have the things we want, so we're applying that same pressure. So a lot of times we have to start, and I'm not saying every incident is like that, but we have to start evaluating what's happening in our homes. And, you know, my child is 7 years old, but I try to set an example for the other young ladies and the other young men to be that person that they can come to. And if we don't stand up against what's wrong in our society and be more vocal, then they don't know who they can come to, you know.
Yeah.
That's just on it.
Yeah.
I agree. One of the things that you just said is knowing, you know, the parents. And one of the things that I try to teach my children is you treat people the way you want to be treated. And usually when my children do something, I will put them in the scenario on the flip side and ask them, now, how would that make you feel? And then that allows them to get a better insight into how they're making someone else feel. The other thing, when you say look at the parent, when a parent suffers from depression or a parent has committed suicide or is suicidal, their children are 50% more likely to suffer from depression, to commit suicide, or to attempt suicide. Depression is hereditary. It runs in families. And so oftentimes we want to pretend like it doesn't exist in the Black community when it's so prevalent in the Black community. And if we don't get treatment and we don't, you know, seek the right kind of medical treatment, it just goes on and on and on, and it gets worse. And then we find ourselves burying our children. And you're absolutely right. Too often times when we watch these videos on Facebook and different things with the fighting, you'll see parents that are on there with the children, or, you know, yeah, jump on them, or yeah, beat their butt, or, you know, and this, that, and the other. And don't get me wrong, there's a time to fight and defend yourself. But a lot of these videos, it's bullying and the parents upholding the bullying. I teach my children, you know, you defend yourself. Somebody hits you, you hit them back. But you don't stand and argue with anybody. Walk away, because you don't have to entertain that. And too often times, we as parents, and I say we because I don't want anybody to feel like I'm pointing the finger at them, don't pour enough into our children to let them know you're beautiful. You know, you're smart, you're talented. One thing about my children have wore designer since they came out the womb. But my children did not know what designer was. All they knew is that they had on, you know, a pair of jeans or a pair of shoes. I did not glorify, you know, Ralph Lauren or Guess or whatever was popular And so now that they're older, they, you know, they could care less about the name brand. All they care is that they look nice. And so I think it's very important, Tiffany, what you brought up is glorifying these names. When we need to be teaching our children to create their own fashion lines, make your name a household
name.
Yes.
What are we pouring into them besides fitting in? Because we're all preachers, and so one thing about us as preachers, the Bible tells us we're peculiar people, meaning we were born to stand out.
Exactly.
So if we're trying to get our children to fit in, no, don't fit in. Be a trendsetter. Follow your own path.
Mm-hmm.
Don't follow the crowd. The other thing I taught my children
and don't let nobody make you feel bad about being different. Don't let anyone make that's the thing. You make a great point there. Stand out and be different, and don't let anybody make you feel bad about doing so. It's okay to be different. At the end of the day, your eyes don't look like hers. Your nose don't look like hers. Your lips don't look like hers. Your hair doesn't look like hers. So why are you trying to be like her? It wasn't meant for
and
you
it makes
to be
you
like
no
her.
Less.
It was meant for you to be you.
And it makes you no less or no more beautiful. You know, we're all beautiful in our own ways, in different ways. We all look different and we're beautiful. And the other thing about following the crowd, you know, you'll find yourself guilty by association. I want to share one story about my daughter. There was an incident at her school a couple of years ago where her and a few of the girls got into it. And they're on, I don't know what social site they were on. I think they were on Instagram. And the girls are going back and forth. It's two groups, and they're going back and forth. And the group that my daughter was in, they were going in on this one girl. And then one of them told the girl, "Why don't you just take a needle and kill yourself?"
Oh, wow.
And, you know, by the time I found out about it, I only found out because the girl that they told that to, I think my daughter was in the eighth grade, and this girl had a friend or a family member in the ninth grade who came over to the middle school to fight them. And it just turned into a big mess. And I was so outraged, even at the principal, because you didn't inform me. And although my child didn't say it, I'm appalled that my child was a part of it, because you don't ever tell somebody to go kill themselves. You don't know what's going on in her mind. And if that child had killed herself, you'd have thought she was mine when I got off of you. You know, it broke my heart. You know, and like I said, my child didn't say it, but you're guilty by association, because this is the little group you were running in. And so we have to teach them to make better choices in their friendships as well. What do your friends represent?
Right.
And that's the thing, you know, we were always taught birds of a feather flock together.
Flock together.
And we, you know, I'm going to be honest, I didn't feel like that was true, because I was nothing like my friends. But when I look back, you know, I was nothing like them. And ultimately, I had no business with them. I didn't see it that way when I was a teenager. But where my life was going and what I was doing and what they were doing were totally different. And I didn't see that as a teenager. But that's something that we have to get across to our young folks, that we have to, you know, embed in their head some way. We're going to go to the phone lines, and we're going to take a caller, because we have quite a few people calling in, and we want to try to get to everybody. So we're going to go to 9571. You're live on the air with Special K, the VIP, and Tiffany. Tell us your name and where you're calling from. Can you hear us? 9517. I do apologize. We've had technical difficulties for the last few weeks, but if you all just bear with us, we'll definitely get everything situated. We're going to pull you back in a few minutes. I wanted to share one thing. Special K, you had spoke of an eighth grader, and the youngest person on record as of today to have committed suicide was a six-year-old. And we asked, what does a six-year-old know about suicide? You know, but that's the youngest person to have committed suicide. And it's sad and it's heartbreaking. And as Tiffany stated, losing one child is one child too many.
So true. So true. And, you know, it breaks my heart to know that someone's, and I'll put it in this sense, it breaks my heart to know that someone's world has become so tainted that it would cause them to no longer to want to be in it. That they would, you know, come to a place that they would be so isolated, even so much as a six-year-old, that they would feel, you know, so alone that they would want to go and take their lives. And that is extremely heartbreaking. And, you know, and again, I just, you know, in this moment, I actually, you know, take this moment and I see myself standing at the top of the hill and banging the gong and blowing the horn and ringing the bell and flashing the lights and whatever sign, whatever noise, whatever beacon that needs to be done so that people can open their eyes and this sleepwalking, this zombie formation that we've gotten ourselves into, to where we're so caught up in the functionality of life that we call it, with work and church and home and kids and work and church and home and kids and work and church and home and kids, that we've become so robotic that we've gotten to a place to where we're out of tune, so much so that we lose sight on as much as a six-year-old. You know, and this is not to take anything away from the adults that are going through these very things as well. You know, but I say the adults who are in these positions were once children, who I believe were probably in these positions as well. And I, you know, so much pressure is happening in life today that it is squeezing the breath out of people. And it's causing people to say, I no longer want to be here. And that this is my white flag, you know, to say, and even a wake up call, a flashing light, a horn blown and the gong beaten, even for me to look in the mirror at myself and begin to ask myself, you know, how is it that you've gotten so busy, too busy, not to be nosy enough to help save somebody else's life? Because the moment we choose to walk past a situation, or the moment we feel it's none of my business, or the moment we feel I'm too tired to deal with it, or I ain't got time for, you know, this craziness and this foolishness and things like that, the moment we get to the place to become selfish enough to say, that ain't me, it ain't about me, it's not hitting my house, it's not touching me, is the moment that we've given up on life for someone else. And then if it happens, God forbid, that it happens to hit your house, then you scream and holler and want to sound all the alarms in the world. Well, why not do it before it hits your house? Because to me, if it hits somebody else's house, that is your house, you know, because we should care enough about others to want to make sure that them and theirs are okay too. So, yeah, this is an alarm sounded even for me. And a wake-up call even for me. And, you know, I hear in this moment, VIP and Tiffany, I hear in this moment, you remember the movie School Days, and you remember at the end of the movie when Lawrence Fishburne was ringing the bell and he was screaming at the crack of dawn, "Wake up! Wake up!" You know, he was just screaming there at the crack of dawn throughout the whole campus and everything like that. And people were, you know, waking up and coming to the windows and coming outside and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I think this is that moment right now that we get, you know, in our communities and get information out and begin to open up, you know, places so these children can have a place to come to. Yes, counselors are there at the school. Yes, we even have counselors there in the church. But oftentimes, ladies, it may not be enough. It just may not be enough.
Mm-hmm. I agree. We're gonna go and take this caller right quick. 9517. You're live on the air.
Hello.
With VIP Special K and Tiffany. Tell us your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, my name is Elder Michelle, and I'm calling from Detroit, Michigan. First of all, I want to say thank you for even allowing me to speak on the line. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
We can
well.
Hear you.
Okay, very good. I have so much to say on this topic because VIP, that was my godson who killed himself. We did not know because he had blocked his mom off his page and I was blocked off of his page. And I didn't get access to his page until after it was over. And I received a phone call and I was devastated. And when I talked with his mom, she had just sent him to a job interview and said everything was fine. She did not know there was absolutely nothing wrong. And I thank God for having VIP within my life at that time because she really helped me because there were so many things that was on Facebook that was posted. It was just, and he was so talented. Young man, he went to school. He was a model. Beautiful. Had everything going for him. And because he was rejected by someone that he loved, he felt like he no longer needed to be here. But if I had known that, I know that I would have been able to convince him that that wasn't real. And you've asked so many questions here on the line as far as the children and the parents. Well, first of all, these parents that are raising these children are still children themselves. They have yet to grow up. They didn't have no one to care for them or love them like how our parents did for us. You know, I was raised with 11 brothers and sisters and never had the best of my. Most of my clothes came from the Goodwill. My mother would starch them, scram and starch them and iron them, and you would think they were brand new. But I knew who I was.
Mm-hmm.
Our children, we're not putting that in their lives to tell them that no matter what anybody say, you are a king or you are a queen. You can do whatever you want to do if you put your mind to it and don't allow anyone to convince you that you're any lower than they are because you're greater than they are. You're better than they are. I teach my grandchildren, because I've raised my kids, but I teach my grandchildren that if somebody is taunting you, talking about you, hating on you, it's for one reason and one reason only. They're jealous of you. They want to be you. It's just that simple. It really
Amen.
Is.
Amen.
But we need to know how to talk to our children. We have to have an open communication. Most kids come home from school and their parents are not at home yet. They don't get home until after 6 or 7 or so. And then they come in, the kids upstairs, they downstairs. Who's sitting at the table with somebody? Who's talking with somebody? I interact with my children, my grandkids. I talk with them. We don't do that anymore. Even with my friends' children, I sit and talk to them. Hey, how you doing? How's school going? Okay, what's going on with this? And I'm going to ask the questions because that's who I am. That's how I was raised. Because it takes a village to raise everybody. But if you see another kid, and if I see another kid doing something he ain't got no business doing, I'm going to check him. And if his mama don't like it, then I'm going to tell her, get your child. Because the bottom line is if I don't check him, he going to end up dead somewhere or in jail. And it's just that simple. I'm not trying to hurt your child. I'm just trying to help you and your child. And I mean, my godson, I miss him so much. But see, this is the thing. He loved his mom so much that he took her to work. He dropped her off, said he was going to the job interview, went to the interview, left the interview, and went to the hospital. Walking around the hospital, I work in the hospital, when they saw him pacing, they put out a code because they see a young man pacing. They didn't really question him too much. He went back outside, he went to the guards booth, and he told them, I need the police. The guard didn't really say anything to him. And when the guard turned around, he blew his brains out. And he used his mother's gun, but he didn't want to do it in her car because he didn't want her to have to, he didn't want her to find him at home if he didn't want her to find him in the car. And it still hurts so much.
Yeah.
Because I raised this child. He died only a few weeks before his birthday.
Yeah.
And so you say, what do we do? You have to start at home. Open up communications with your children. Shut your TV down. Shut off social media. Have a dinner. Sit down at the dinner table and eat dinner with your kids. Have a conversation with them. Find out how their day went. That's what you have to do.
That's true. We have to act on engaging. We have nothing to apologize for. We have to ask those engaging questions with our children, not just how was your day, but what did you do? Follow-up questions. And we have to take notice when things change in their lives.
Yeah.
I think
look
one
at
of
their
the
demeanor. Watch
important
how they
things
act.
Watch how they act. But one of the most important things, Maya Angelou, and I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, whenever she would tell her grandmother she loved her, her grandmother would say, God loves you. That's all that matters. And although some people think that I've taught my children to be cold, don't get me wrong, I teach my children that I love them. They are my world. But I also teach my children, you don't beat a path down to nobody's door. I don't care who it is, and that includes me. If I act like I don't want to be bothered with you and I got better things to do with my time, then you have better things to do with your time. And you don't allow people to walk in and out of your life at their leisure. And, you know, some people think my children are a little cold when it comes to that. But I can live with that because I never want my child, either one of my children, to be depressed or suicidal because this man didn't love them or that woman didn't love them or daddy wasn't there or mama didn't. I want them to know as long as they got God, they don't need nobody else, and that includes me. Simply because I don't want their self-worth to be dependent on anybody walking this earth, because people will let you down. I don't teach them not to be compassionate. Don't get me wrong. I just teach them not to be dependent on somebody else's approval. And I think that's very important, that our children are not dependent on somebody else's approval or somebody else's love. Because one of the things that Special K just brought out, most adults that deal with suicide were children that dealt with suicide. And I know for me, I was a suicidal teenager, and I became a suicidal adult. God hasn't saw fit for me to leave here, and this day, this year, I'm grateful for that. But there, I wasn't always grateful for that. And we'll look at children that are acting out, and we'll think that they're just bad, or they're just troublemakers, or they're just this, or they're just that. Just speaking from my own experience, growing up in middle school and high school, people had no idea what I dealt with in my home life. And so I had a low tolerance for anybody else doing anything. I tolerated no disrespect from anybody. I didn't care if you were an adult. You were not going to talk to me any kind of way, because I had to go home and be talked to any kind of way. And I'm grateful that there were teachers who saw past the anger, and they saw the hurt, and they saw the pain, and they nurtured and they loved me, you know, as much as they could. And that's what we're saying when we're saying it takes a village. When you see a child that's acting out, that seems to be angry, or maybe even seems to be a troublemaker, are there some bad seeds in the world? Yeah, there are. There are some kids that just do it just because they can. But we have to take the time to figure out which one is a bad seed and which one is just planted in a bad pot. We have to do our part as a community.
Wow. That's good. That's very
we
good.
We think that we think that everybody's, or we would like to think, and we speak like everybody's home life is good, is great, or, you know, parents are doing what they're supposed to do. But just like children cover things up, parents cover things up. You have parents who call their children everything but a child of God. You have parents who, you know, beat their children. You have children who they come out and they act out and they're tough and all of this because they're scared to breathe at home. And I just feel like we have to do our part. It's more than just somebody else's problem. It's all of our problem. Because the truth of the matter is, when a 10th grader commits suicide, my daughter didn't know this young man that well because she's just gotten into this school. But it affected her. So when someone loses their child to suicide, it doesn't just affect that family. It's a ripple effect. Elder Spencer can tell you, I was affected by the loss of her godson before I even knew it was her godson. We were talking, and I was telling her about one thing, and then she goes, wait, that was my godson. And it was like, you know, I wasn't just affected because it affected my friend. I was affected already and then double affected because it affected my friend. So there's this ripple effect of losing a person to suicide that ripples through our community. So we have to stop waiting for it to knock on our door.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, Ann, does the pain go away? No, his mom, I talk to her all the time, and she posts stuff all the time. And it just hurts. It hurts because we're still wondering why. And then he left a message that said, he said that life, I'm just paraphrasing, but he said, in life you have choices to make. And sometimes your choices affect those you love the most. But I really need y'all to understand that it's not you. This was my choice. I choose this.
Yeah.
And then he told us how to marry him. What he wanted, what he wanted to wear, and what he wanted us to wear. Now imagine, he's going through this in his mind. But he's also trying to, he's also walking around as if there is absolutely nothing wrong. He said a couple of times, I just abhor people. When I read those posts, I had to call VIP because I'm like, can you help me? Because I'm reading this, and I'm like, who read this and didn't call his mother? Or who read this and didn't call me? Who wouldn't call his grandmother? And everybody that posted after he was dead are the same people that saw it when he posted it. And now you want to say something? I just feel some kind of way. And so I would say to any individual listening to this radio talk show, that if you're having any kind of issues, any kind of problems, please talk to your parents. Please talk to your pastor or your aunt, your uncle, your best friend's mother, somebody, because there is help for you. You are loved. You are somebody. You can be whoever you want to be, and it's not that bad. When that 6-year-old killed themselves, I was floored. 6. That's my grandbaby just ran through here. And you don't want to live? Oh, my God, I can't even imagine. And I really thank you guys for even having this talk show.
Amen. We certainly appreciate you coming on and sharing your story with us, and what a touching story it is. Certainly our condolences from all of us at Girl Me Too, and I'm sure all of our listeners as well. Our condolences to you for sure. No devastation greater than to lose someone you love, and then to know that someone that you love was in so much pain that they would want to take themselves away. So many unanswered questions that's there. So our prayers definitely go out to you, and definitely go out to your family and his family also there, because that is extremely devastating. And just to reach out to our listeners there, for those who are listening now, for those who are going to listen in the future, as she said, don't let it get to the place to where it's too late. Reach out, get to someone, even if you feel like you can't talk. I mean, if you got to just sit with somebody and just cry for a minute, just get to someone so that, because we can't fix it if we don't know. There's plenty of us out there who's willing, who is available, who is ready to help. in any way possible that we can. Again, I said this earlier in the beginning of the show, this is a mandate at this time because we have children that's dropping at a rapid rate. And guys, understand that children dropping at a rapid rate isn't because someone else is taking their lives. It's because they're taking their own. It's hard enough to know that we're losing family members and things like that to accidents and senseless killings and drugs and all these other things that's happening and that's going on. It's that much more devastating, and I do mean that much more devastating to know that they're taking their own lives because of the pressure. As the elder said here, the rejection is part of what caused this young man to take his life, and we don't understand sometimes how powerful those elements can be to us with things that go on in our lives. You know, one of the things that I used to say when I was younger, even as I got older, one of the things that I used to say is I would never, ever get to a place where I would be depressed enough to take my own life. I would never, ever get to a place where I would be selfish enough to take my own life. I would never be that person that would do those kind of things. At that time when I made those statements, I didn't understand the pain and the pressure and the storms that others went through that brought them to those places. We do have, and I'll put it in this sense, we do have some bodybuilders in life. And I'm putting it in this sense because we can see the physical side of it. We have bodybuilders in life, some that are huge, got biceps, abs, guns that we call them, that are larger than life. You want to kind of just go feel them and touch them. You got some that are weak and thin and frail and have that bulimic look to them where they're looking like, you know, if they miss one more meal that they may not make it. And spiritually, emotionally, you find a lot of people in that sense. Emotionally, you find some bodybuilders. And then emotionally, you find some that's in a different state, that's the weaker state, that bulimic state that's there where they can't handle a lot of weight there because it would break them and it will bring them down. This is the thing that I say. If the bodybuilders come together with those that are much more frail, we'll still be a strong people. We'll still be a strong nation because now we're helping one another and we're helping, you know, keep each other up rather than the bodybuilder continuing just to build and lift weights on them on their own and continue to feed themselves and see the weak person over there knowing that they'll break in any minute. But you say that's none of my business, so you don't go over there to them. We need to be able to recognize the frail ones and be able to see those frail ones and be able to pull them out. I think it's great that you're strong. I think it's great that you're not that person that will be at that place. Now help someone else who is, because the reality is that we have people that are like that, and they are ever present, and they are showing up, and they are speaking loudly. Unfortunately, we're hearing it too late. I think we need to tune in. And that's an actual great word. We need to tune in. It's time to tune in to the radio frequency that is screeching at a screeching level at this point. It's time for us to tune in and get busy and begin to save the lives of those that are screaming for us to save them. And we've got to get to a place to where we're doing it before it's too late.
Hello?
I don't know where everybody else went. Is everybody here?
I'm here.
Okay, awesome. I don't know. We may have lost VIP there and the elder there. I think we may have lost VIP and the elder. So they may be coming back in and rolling back in. But Tiffany, excuse me, just to ask a question
I
heard you say.
I've been talking.
You were talking? Oh, wow.
Well, I was like, what happened to VIP? Where did she go? Okay, so go ahead and finish this. Go ahead with your statement there, VIP.
No, I wasn't talking at that moment, but I had been talking, and I thought y'all could hear me.
No.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I was asking Tiffany a question because I know that she's a youth pastor, and I've been a youth pastor as well, and I know that you're one now, and you made a statement that the children today are nowhere different than, you know, I mean, are nowhere the same as we were when we were kids. And then the vital point that you made was that the relationship today, which is so very important, the relationship today between mother and daughter, father and daughter, mother and son, father and son, is so much more different than what it was for us back then. There was just a certain level. And this is something that is not talked about very much in the Black community either. So just in my question to you, Tiffany, just giving us a pointers, giving us some tips and things like that, you being a psychology major there, giving us some tips and pointers and things like that, things to look for, how to reach out to our kids, you know, that kind of good stuff that we can look forward to in watching and seeing signs for those that are not speaking but are physically and emotionally crying out.
It goes back to what the elder was saying, and I think both of you ladies were saying, we have to communicate with our kids. People used to laugh at me because my daughter is 7 years old, and I actually ask her how she feels about things. When somebody says something to her, I ask her how she feels. How did that make you feel? You know, because if we learn to communicate with them, a lot of the things, like you said, we'll recognize when something is not right. So I know when my daughter is sad. I know when she's unhappy about something. She doesn't have to say anything because I communicate with her every day, you know. And I think that that's something that's missing. We haven't been taught how to communicate the right way. And a lot of times when we do communicate as parents, we're communicating to discipline them. And so while you have to have a balance of rewards and discipline, a lot of times we only show up when it's problems. We only express concern when there's an issue,
yes,
when the entire time they've been screaming for help or they've been exhibiting signs that's leading toward a certain behavior, but we overlooked it. And so we waited until the situation got too out of hand and out of control to try to get a grasp on it. So my biggest thing, I tell the parents at my church all the time, don't wait till the problem becomes a wildfire. The first sign,
right,
of the issues,
right,
you need to address that with your kid. The first sign that your child,
right,
is behavior has changed, that they're moping a lot or that there's something going on in their lives, communicate that. We need to know not only who their friends are, but who they are interested in courting. And we need to know what's happening in their relationships. And a lot of times,
mm-hmm,
you know, especially with our little girls, we don't want them to date, but they're doing it. And so we don't know when they experience their first heartbreak because we weren't actively involved in their dating process. There's a way, you know, each parent has their rules regarding that, but there's a certain way that our kids can court and quote-unquote court and do it in a respectful way and parents be engaged to the point. So if that little boy breaks up with her, if she breaks up with him, you know what's going on, and you can coach them through that. Baby, you're going to have heartbreak. You know, problems are going to happen. I tell my daughter all the time, everybody's not going to like you, and it's okay. You know, if we allow them to understand that it's okay to go through things and then to allow them see us go through things, you know, I don't have a problem if I'm hurting to shed tears in front of my daughter and sometimes hold her and rock her because she'll see me at a broken place, she'll see me come out of that broken place, and then she'll have something in her memory to say, wait, my mama went through this, and she survived. But like you all said, a lot of times we don't allow our children to see us go through anything, or, you know, because we're always trying to create this image and we're dealing with stuff and we don't show them. Everybody experiences life. Life happens whether you want it to or not. But we have to show them how, you know what, we can preach all day long, but our biggest sermons are going to be through our actions and not through our words. So, you know, I'm just a firm believer in that communication. We've got to have it. And, you know, there was only so much we could do when we were younger. We didn't have the social media. We couldn't afford cars. It was one family car. So, and everybody was together. You know, we didn't have enough to get into that we could get into in our personal space like they have. So they can pull away now and they can go to social media. They can pull away and get on the computer. They can drive away and go hang out with friends. And we have no idea the things that they're being exposed to because we're not asking all the questions. And then when we see signs, a couple of weeks ago, I woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning and there was a young lady who's a young mother on Facebook who said, I have nothing to live for. I know my kids need me, but they would be better off without me. I didn't ignore it because, you know, it quickened me. I'm like, this is a suicide message right here. And people were commenting on there like, I'm here if you need me, that sort of thing. I picked up the phone and I called my mother and I said, you need to call her pastor because I don't have her number. And we need to keep on reaching out to her until we get a hold of her. And my mom at 5:30 in the morning called her pastor. Pastor called her until she got her, and she had literally made a suicide attempt, but they were able to get to her. So it's that kind of stuff that we can't brush off, we can't ignore, and we've got to be willing to be uncomfortable. I would have loved to have rolled over and went back to sleep, but I would have been like, her blood would have been at my hand if I ignored it. And right. So we have to be responsible in our sister and brother's keeper, and we've got to look out for our kids just the same. Like, you know, I talk to my kids at church every Wednesday night when we have Bible study, and every Sunday when I see them, and through the week if they fall on my mind, tell me what's on your mind. Tell me what's going on at school. Is there something that I need to address for you? You know, situations like that. And I'll have them come to me with a friend that's depressed, that I don't even know this kid. Okay, tell them to call me. But we have to, you know, give our kids permission to come to us and let them know if they are not safe coming to us, go to so-and-so. They're cool. You know, give them an alternative because we might not always want to talk to mama and daddy, but we can provide them an alternative source, and that the kid needs to trust that source enough to know that if they tell them something, that they'll protect it, what they're saying, and they won't run around and gossip with it. You know, they need to feel safe.
Yeah.
If the parents are not their safe haven, let them have one somewhere. My little cousins all come to me, and they're like, I don't want you to tell mama, but this is what I'm going through. I'm feeling this type of way. And that way I can be accountable to them and call them and check on them and be there for them until they get out of what they're in. And it's not going to always be comfortable for us that's making the vow that we're going to be there for each other. It's going to sometimes be late in the midnight hour that we might have to get up and be there for that person, but it's worth it.
One of the things that you said, Tiffany, that was so prevalent was we have to be willing to be uncomfortable for somebody else. And I'll never forget when I got a call at 3 o'clock in the morning and this person was 45 minutes away. And I have to get out of my bed at 3 o'clock in the morning and drive 45 minutes. But was their life more important than my sleep that we need to stress, you know, to people, to everyone, including young people, but to everyone? When you know of someone that's struggling with depression and suicidal thoughts, you're worried, you know, are they going to get mad at me if I tell? Because having a confidant is one thing. And there are some things, you know, I tell anybody, you know, especially young people that talk to me, you don't have to worry about me running back, telling your parents this, this, that, and the other. But if your life is at stake,
right,
that's a whole nother situation, and I can't hold that. But the one thing that I want to stress to everyone, especially our young people, at some point a person's life has to be more, because
yes.
I'd rather have a friend that I love still walking around and not speaking to me than have them buried in the ground knowing that I could have done something to help them or save them. Because at some point,
mm-hmm.
they'll realize that you love them enough to save their life.
Yeah.
But their life has to be more important to you than their friendship.
Absolutely.
We definitely have to get, you know, to a point where we know the difference between snitching and saving someone.
Yes. Absolutely. And it's and like you said, it's not a snitch if you're saving someone's life. And I'm with you, VIP. I don't care if you're going to be angry with me. I'd rather you be angry with me and know that you're here and walking around and okay than for me to be, as Tiffany said, having your blood on my hands, knowing that I could have done something. And that's our human responsibility. That's the responsibility of us as humans to be able to step up and be bold enough, to be nosy enough to find out the information and then take that information that you have and do what needs to be done with it. Now, it makes you a little different if you take that information and you telling, you know, people's business and making situations worse. But if you're doing things in a way, you know, to help someone,
mm-hmm.
and to uplift them and encourage them, then that's definitely what we need to do to make sure that we're on the right track with them and making sure that we're bringing them out of whatever hole it is. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be the one that bring them out, but you may
exactly.
have the path or the people or the resources and things like that that's going to get them to the right place that can get them out. Your assistance in that is still very important and very vital there. Just because you wasn't the one that jumped in the pool and swam over to them and saved them to get them out doesn't necessarily mean you pointing and screaming and saying, hey, they need help. Doesn't mean that wasn't important enough, because you seeing them and pointing and screaming and saying, hey, they need help, is the very thing that caused someone to pay attention and dive in there and go get them. So we have to understand that every aspect, we have to understand that every action taken is very important. And as Tiffany just demonstrated with the situation that happened, follow up, follow up, follow up,
mm-hmm.
follow up. Follow up. I say it again, follow up. Don't just, you know, and I think, VIP, I think you said this on one of our shows one time before, and I think I saw somebody post this as well, how we, you know, people put stuff on social media and saying, please pray for me, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm going through this, or I'm in the hospital, that, or I lost someone, and we'll type the word praying, or we'll type the word, you know, whatever it is that we're doing for them, when in all actuality, once you finish typing the word, you go right back to your daily whatever, and you really didn't even send up a prayer, and you really didn't even say, you know, anything for that particular individual. You just typed, I'm praying for you, kind of thing. But in this case, it's very important that we do the follow-up behind what's happening and what's going on in the lives of the people, especially when you have someone that is suicidal. Because oftentimes, you know, we're right there in the heat of the moment the first few days that something happens, and then after that you fall off. And you have to understand those people are still battling with those demons. Those people are still battling with those spirits. And it's an ongoing process, and we need to stay with it and make sure whomever we connected them with is staying with it as well and following up on the process and making sure that they're okay.
Right. I think that's the key
yeah.
here, following up. You know, don't allow these people to fall by the wayside. You know, Am I my brother's keeper? Am I my sister's keeper? Yes, we are. And we all have to be accountable for one another. That's just, the bottom line. We all have to be accountable for one another. And we have to stop thinking that everyone else is going to pick up the slack. I want to, you know, before the night ends here, I want to give out this number to the suicide prevention hotline because I think that it's so important, you know, that our listeners have it. And the number is 1-800-273-8255. Again, the number is 1-800-273-8255. That's the number to the suicide prevention hotline. And it's a 24-hour a day, 7 days a week line. So there's never an excuse that you couldn't reach anyone. Mm-hmm. If you don't feel like you have anyone to talk to, the three of us on the phone, and yes, I'm volunteering you ladies, but inbox us on Facebook. We are very
Absolutely.
Prevalent with getting back to people. And I'm going to say this about the three of us as well. If you're looking for a solution to your problem, we're going to do our best to find that solution. If you're looking to just complain about your problems, I'll be honest enough to tell you we're not the people to call. We're about solutions. We're about helping. We're about finding a way to make it better. That's what we're about, and we want to get better for everyone. We will pray for you. We will pray with you. We just need the opportunity to be able to do that for you. So call into the show. Leave a message on the show page that you need us to get in contact with you. Inbox us, any of that. And we are more than happy to do whatever it is that is within our power.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, I volunteered
Amen.
You all, but I know you all well enough to know that wasn't a problem. So
absolutely not. Thank you.
Right. Absolutely. And as you said, don't forget our page there as well. You know, inbox us information. Even if you know someone that's dealing with it, inbox us their information. If someone needs someone to be reached out to, connected with, any kind of way that just, you know, some counseling, conversation with, whatever. If you've got somebody, definitely please inbox us at Girl Me Too Radio Show page and let us reach out to them. We'll be more than happy to do so.
One of the things, although our show has focused mainly around the youth, we all know that suicide is something that, you know, it affects families, whether it's the youth or whether it's a parent. So when we say, if you know someone in need, we're not just talking about the youth. We're talking about anybody that is standing mm-hmm. in need, dealing with this issue, anybody. And we want you all to know that you are not alone in this fight. And whatever you're going through, no matter how bad it may seem at this moment, it is going to get better. Things don't always get better overnight. You know, so I don't want to present it like, oh, we just have a magic wand that we're going to wave. We will be the first people to tell you sometimes you have to go through the storm in order mm-hmm. to get to the rainbow. You know, flowers do not grow without rain. Life is not always going to be what we want it to be when we want it to be that. And so mm-hmm. we're not here to sell a dream or a fantasy. We're about reality, and life gets hard sometimes, and people go through things, and you know, sometimes these things are hard pressing on every side. So
yes.
We're not trying to sit here and make it seem like, you know, none of this stuff is worth you being depressed over. We also want to stress there's a difference between depression, being depressed and suffering from depression.
Mm-hmm.
A person who is just depressed is because of their circumstances, their situation, what's going on in their life, what's going on around them. And that can be a lot easier to deal with and bring them out of. But a person who suffers from depression, nothing has to be wrong in their life. Everything can be going perfect, and they can still be depressed because they have an illness. It's not the same thing. And most people don't understand that. They say, oh, snap out of it. All you have to do is think positive. Well, for a person who suffers from depression, it does not work like that.
Right.
It's not about thinking positive. It's not about snapping out of it. It's not about looking at all that you have or everything that's going on great in your life, because it's a chemical imbalance in the brain that prevents
mm-hmm.
them from being able to just snap out of it, that prevents them from being able to just, you know, look at what's great in their lives. And so we know how to deal with both of those situations. And what we can't do, we will definitely refer you to someone in your area who can help, you know, even further than we can help. We just want you to get help. We just want you to know that you're not alone. We just want you to know that this doesn't have to be the last chapter in your book, the last chapter in your story, because there's so much more, and there's someone out there that needs to hear your story of how you survive so they can survive. I'm sorry, I kind of got on my soapbox for a minute. But
I know, that was good.
I just want people to know, many people don't know this about me, but I did state earlier in the show that I was an adult who, you know, suffered from suicidal tendencies. And what was it, 2010? So 6 years ago, on September 15th, I tried to take my own life, and the doctors told my friends and family that this was between me and God, and there was nothing else that the doctors could do for me. And they told my mother that I had a 50-50 chance of living and dying. There was a time when I did not desire to be here, but God, and that's all I can tell you, but God. And not only but God, he put me in a position to be able to help someone else that's in that dark place, because most people don't understand. People do view suicide as selfish. On some levels, it's selfish, but on other levels, it's like a person who is suffering from cancer that's on their deathbed and they're in so much pain that it hurts to move. When you're a person who suffers from the illness depression, it becomes a mental pain that takes on physical characteristics. there was a time in college where my big sister in college and her friends rushed me to the hospital. And the doctor kept asking them what kind of drugs was I on. And they kept telling me she's not on drugs. She doesn't do anything. She don't drink. She don't smoke. She does nothing. And the doctor is literally yelling at them, saying, look, now is not the time to cover for her. She could die. You need to tell me what she took. And they're standing there looking stupid, like nothing. Like, we don't know what to tell you. She's on nothing. So the doctor, you know, walks away pissed off at my college friend, and he runs a toxicology report so he can find out for himself. And when he got the toxicology report back, he was actually shocked. They were telling him the truth. I was on absolutely nothing. No alcohol in my system, no type of drugs in my system. And I tell you this story because I want you to know the physical effect a mental condition can have on you. I was so mentally beat down and drained that my body resembled someone that was ODing on drugs. And that was the first time I was diagnosed as having depression. So when people say it's selfish, you don't know what to do with all that pain. You don't know what to do with that mental pain. You don't know what to do with that physical pain. And a lot of times you feel like the world would be better off without you, because people get tired of hearing you're sad. People get tired of hearing you're depressed. People get tired of looking at you being sad and depressed. And so I know for me, I go into a cocoon, which is hard for a lot of my friends. I just kind of shut myself off from the world. I don't answer my phone. I don't answer my door. I don't go nowhere. I just want to be to myself. What has helped me, and I hope that it helps someone else, because I have people that I love so dearly, I try to let them know that I'm okay, so I'm not disrupting their lives any more than I already have, to where they're not so worried about me that they become stressed out. And because I have to do that for the people that I love, it kind of forces me to come out of my shell a little bit. And so ultimately we're helping each other. We have to know that this is a real problem. We have to know that people don't always know how to explain it, because sometimes I'm sad because it's Tuesday. Nothing happened. Life is great. Children are healthy, bills are paid, relationships fine, but I'm just crying, you know. And so I say all of that to say, for those that don't suffer from depression, for those that don't understand suicide, have a little more compassion for what you don't understand, because those of us that suffer, we don't always understand. We don't always have an answer. We're not always able to explain it to you. Have a little more compassion. Have a little more patience. And keep reaching out. Don't allow someone that you love to shut you out when you know that this is what they suffer from. It takes a village. Mm-hmm. We are that village. And we have to keep reaching out. And sometimes, again, we have to step outside of our comfort zone. Because like I said, I teach my children, you don't knock no path down to nobody's door. But when it comes to a person who suffers from mental illness, we have to knock down a path to their door. because if we allow them to stay behind that door, now we have to bury them. Any closing remarks, ladies?
I think you closed it very well there. Again, I say, listen, even to the silent alarms that are going off in the minds and lives of the children and of the event individuals altogether. We need to make sure that we are paying attention. It's time to wake up people and see, truly see what's happening and what's going on and what's happening with the people today and the different things that's taken place. And we've got to get to a place to where we're comfortable with interfering. We're comfortable with being nosy. We've got to get out of that mode of it's none of my business. We've got to get out of that mode of it's not in my house or I'm not going to be bothered with it kind of thing. We've got to get out of that mode and get to a place to where we're concerned enough to look at that individual as your daughter, as your cousin, as your brother, as your mother, as your father, as your child, and look at them in that sense and want to step in enough to find out and see what's going on. And again, as I said earlier, you may not be the one to reach them, but have somebody in place that will be able to go to them and reach them and talk to them and things like that. In that same analogy that was used there, you know, if you see them drowning in the pool, if you can't swim, that's understandable, but at least scream for help and let somebody else be able to get to them. And just know every action is important. Every action is vital, and the small thing that you think you did that was too little could be the big thing that caused somebody's life to be saved. So it's time to tune in, people. So let's tune in and save the lives of these kids and these people.
Amen. Tiffany, did you want to add anything?
Sure. I would just like to say that just because it's not a problem to you doesn't mean it's not a problem to them. Don't try to measure up how somebody should feel about a certain situation because you're not in their shoes. So when someone comes to you or you know someone is dealing with something, even if their problem doesn't seem like it's big to you, if it's big to them, pay attention. And to those that are out there that may be in the point that you deal with depression or struggle with thoughts of suicide, we'll be the first to tell you you're valuable. You know, your life is worth living. You don't have to try to compete with anyone else. It's okay to be who you are. Flaws and all, we all have them. A lot of us are just better at covering them up. But we all go through things, but you are not alone. And, you know, find somebody because everybody, there are people that care about you. They're just not hearing the signs. So, you know, love yourself enough to fight another day. And you don't have to try to figure out your life all at one time. Just live one day at a time, and things will get better. So I just want to encourage anybody out there that is dealing with depression, because I know I've been in a place where I've dealt with depression. It's real. You are not alone. There's nothing wrong with you. You're valuable. You're worth it. So reach out to us. You can be anonymous. You know, you can give us your information. We'll do whatever we can. Like, you know, VIP said, we're all here. You know, your life matters. So hang in there and just be encouraged. If you aren't you, then nobody else can be you either. So you're important. You're here on
Amen.
Earth for a reason. Fulfill that purpose because we all need you.
Amen. Amen. Before we go, we want to give the suicide prevention hotline number again, 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255. We thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Girl Me Too radio show on the Poets Without Limits Network. Please tune in next week. We got another hot topic coming up next week. We love you all, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.